What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
They told me that this volume will shut the others. No. Well, a bit. Okay, but anyway, thank you very much for being here, and it's a pleasure for me to introduce today the two literary guests of honor, or two of the many literary guests we have, apart from Charles Stross as well. I wanted to first say some words about how you happened to come here, because in my search for, let's say, science fiction authors that do not come always from the same pool of writers, I've started this long quest to search for other countries. And of course, Canada is not so far away from our imagination and from our market as well. We have many examples of Canadian writers like Robert Sawyer or Margaret Atwood, William Gibson, of course, as well. But the fact is that for me, your identity is also something a bit different from the so-called big science fiction writer. The ones I've mentioned are considered, they're worldwide examples of science fiction writers. Whether your production and your books are also in a different way, in a different position, in a different manner, I think. Claude Lalimier is a in a way you're a Francophone Canadian, okay, right. And I've had the pleasure of meeting him 2 years ago at the Eurocon in Barcelona, and since then we have exchanged a lot of emails about possible stories that I could translate and publish on my small press Future Fiction. And so I'm very happy to have the possibility to invite him here, as he's also a very big fan of Italy and the Mediterranean. So this is a good connection that I am really proud to have established. On the other side, Rich Larson is originally born in West Africa, in Niger. So that was something that interests me at the beginning, because you are, in a way, you have also this experience. You've lived the first year of your life in Africa. So you're not typically, you know, a white American or the white North American guy. And so that also represents an interesting point of view, and also the stories that you write can address this kind of different milieu that you've been that you lived in, and so these are the main reasons why I was very happy to publish these two small books that are just being released now, and they are also in dual language, something that I really care about, to see how the original story is being translated in Italian. I want to thank, of course, the translators Fiorella Moscatello for the work of Claude Lalumière, and Lorenzo Crescentini for the work of Rich Larson. So, I want to start. I prepare some questions, and this question, of course, has to apply to any of you, both of you, and then probably we will go into personal analysis or personal question for each. So, the first question I wanted to ask you is probably, let's take it, you know, a bit in general, and what is the most important aspect, if there are more, in a science fiction story for you, okay? Whether it's ideas, plotting, characters, or style. Of course, any of these play a role, but what resonates more in your work?
For me, I think about science fiction in terms of style a lot. And the first thing that drew me to science fiction when I was a kid was probably watching Star Wars and various science fiction or superhero cartoons. And I was attracted first to just the visuals, the way things looked. And then it was after that that I started reading science fiction and started looking for that same style, but being able to see it in a different way in my own head. And from there, I wanted to start writing it myself. So for me, style is really important, probably my top.
Well, is this mic on? Yes, okay. I would say, and this will touch on something that Francesco said about me, I would say that language is the most important part. And as Francesco said, I'm actually a Francophone Canadian, but I write in English. And my inner life is entirely in English. Even though I was born a Francophone, I was educated in French, my family is entirely Francophone, and yet I turned out to be an English writer. And I would tie science fiction into that. Part of what attracts me to English is that it is a language of possibility. It is a language that is extremely flexible. It is a language that you can play with, that you can break, that you can bend, that you can express virtually anything in virtually any way. But I was brought up in French, and French is a very rigid language that you can not bend, that you cannot break, and that resists virtually any attempt at trying to express things differently. A common expression in French is "Mais ça ne se dit pas en français," which is "But you can't say that in French." And I'm often translated into French. It's the language I'm translated into the most frequently, and it's always a struggle with the translator because it's a language I understand. So I work in tandem with the translator, and we're always trying to find ways to do with the French language the things that I do with the English language, and it's not easy. It's not a language that lends itself to that. So I would say, because English is the language of change, the language of possibility, the language of imagination, to me that's the most important part.
And that says a lot about how science fiction genre is considered outside the genre.
Right.
One writer said the most important thing for me is style, and the other is language.
Yeah.
And we are considered the writers of the, you know, non-style and non-language.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
it's all about plotting and ideas, right? And so it changed a lot in the perception. Right. Another curiosity I have is we are in this beautiful venue, Fuji, and it's an Italian science fiction convention. Probably you're the first time in a science fiction convention as guest of honor, Rich, right? Okay. I wanted to ask you here two different things, probably. The first here for Claude is science fiction conventions in Canada. How is it like?
Well, I'm actually going to be in a science fiction convention in Canada in 2 weeks, so I can speak to a little bit to that. In Canada, we're a dual language country, and it's been described as the two solitudes. Like, so there's French and English, and there are two solitudes who coexist. So the English part and the French part are very different. So the one I'm going to be with, that I'm going to be at in 2 weeks, is a French convention in Montreal. It's the annual convention for Quebec, and it's called Boreal. And even though I'm an English writer, they invite me every year because I'm a Francophone and they all know me. So I'm just part of the crowd. And the French ones are a little more on the intellectual side. Like, it's definitely a more academic, not quite academic, but very intellectual kind of convention. They also have fun, but it's deep thinking. The English conventions tend to be much more fan-oriented, with costumes and all of that stuff, like more media-oriented. There's one big exception, and that's in the city where we both live. It's in Ottawa. There's a convention called CanCon, which is the Canadian science fiction convention. It's not the biggest one, but it's the one to represent all of Canada, and it is in Ottawa. And that one is striving very hard to be a very smart convention, and it's very different in character from all the other ones in English Canada.
Okay, for Rich, I wanted to ask you about the publishers and the magazines in Canada, if there are. I mean, I think the publisher are, you know, there are they in a good situation, or what are the best online magazine or written magazines in Canada at the moment?
I've never actually sent a written submission anywhere in my life. From the very start, it was all online, electronic, okay, Email submission. And so for me, it was always very fluid whether a magazine was based in the UK, Canada, US, wherever. But my very first science fiction publication was in a Canadian magazine called AE, the Canadian Science Fiction Review. I'm not sure what's going on with them, if they're still around or not. Their website was hit by some kind of hack, and they were out of the picture for a long time. But they had a quotient where they had to have a certain percentage of their publications be Canadian. And so I saw that, and I was like, oh, my chances just went up. So I think I've sold them 4 or 5 stories over the years. But in general, I send to magazines that are based in the US, because that's where the money is.
Okay. Then I have a question for both of you as a strange question. But as a writer, what book would you have liked to write, and a book of another writer, and why? A book that you envy that someone else has written.
Well, that's ridiculously easy.
Yeah.
Okay.
But why?
Yeah, okay. I can also do that. I can, as I said, ridiculously easy.
Okay, I know what it is.
So yeah, I mean, obviously, it's my favorite book.
Yeah.
So it's Crash by J.G. Ballard, which is, as far as I'm concerned, the greatest novel ever written. And if I could ever succeed in doing that, what he did with that, I would be incredibly proud. Part of what I like about it is that it's a novel, yes, but in many ways it's written like a short fiction piece, and because it has the density of short fiction. It doesn't meander the way a lot of novels do. It is incredibly dense, it is rich with strangeness. Its POV is flawless. Its daring and its courage are also flawless, and it is a book that is unafraid of the consequences of its own themes, and it pushes through as far as it possibly can on the consequences of the theme, and that complete that courage. I mean, because the book is so extreme. In a rare instance, what Ballard did, he gave the protagonist his own name because he wanted to take full responsibility for the content, because the content was so extreme. And I admire that novel above all else.
Great choice.
I think for me, the novel would be Feed by M.T. Anderson. It's kind of a technological satire about like the collapse of the United States and the omnipresence of advertising. I guess I would call it kind of like post-cyberpunk in its feel. And I read it when I was a kid, and it just blew my mind. And I thought that it was going to be the biggest book ever. I mean, it has won awards, but I thought it was going to be like the defining book of everyone's life. But it wasn't. They didn't even make a movie of it.
Yeah.
So if I could go back in time and write Feed, I would do it.
Okay. My next question is about your influences. Now we are all immersed into a multimedia drive of experiences, like we get ideas from books, but we get ideas from comics, you get ideas from TV series. Is there any particular source of inspiration you get from other media, or do you consider in a way that writing has a different pace, a different rhythm, a different way to interact with our part, with our neurons, with our different part of our intellect that is slow, that is they tech in a way, even though we can write in a fast way, but it anyway doesn't affect the eye, doesn't have special effects, you know. Or do you think that writing in a way is influenced, deeply influenced, that we are slowly starting to write in a different way from like 100 or 200 years ago, where different media weren't even didn't exist?
Well, there are multiple parts to your question, so there's going to be multiple parts to my answer to this. First, when it comes to inspiration, for me, it's not about ideas. I think ideas are, as we say in English, a dime a dozen. I get many more ideas than I could ever write every day. I don't understand anyone who says they don't have ideas. Ideas mean nothing. It's all in execution. But where inspiration comes from, because it's not just about the ideas, it's about finding the right voice, it's about finding the right atmosphere, finding the right characters, and to me, nothing will inspire me more than travel. And especially walking in a new city where I've never been before, and not even doing any research first, just going in blind and walking through a new environment will spark my imagination like crazy. But beyond that, to go back to your thing about TV and comics and other, I find that, and I said this, I think, in our interview the other day, is that all art is in conversation with both other art and with culture in general. So, and it's hard to avoid being in that conversation, and you should actually actively be in that conversation. So it's important to be aware of what your peers are doing, what your predecessors have done, and how you're contributing to a growing dialogue.
Yeah, for me, I don't get a lot of inspiration from books, because one of my deep, dark secrets is that I don't read very much these days. I watch a lot more Netflix than I read books. So for me, visual media is actually a really big source of inspiration. Video games, movies, TV series. Because I'm so attracted to style, seeing something in motion always sparks a lot of ideas for me. And then I can use that to write and go deeper, because there are things that you can do in writing that visual media cannot accomplish. For example, internality, going inside of people's heads, showing what they're thinking and feeling in a more direct way that connects the reader directly to the character. In terms of the way we consume media, changing how we write, maybe in terms of form, I know that people seem to think short stories should be taking off now because everyone is used to reading things very quickly. We're all trained to read tweets or blog posts that are extremely short. We consume the news in tiny little chunks. And so it seems like short stories should be the ideal form now for us. And you probably know more about that than I do as an editor.
Well, I'm also a writer, but what I can say is that true. I publish mostly short stories, and I consider that also the best form. Because of course, in a book there can be many ideas, but it's like you're running the 100 meters and you're running the marathon. The two things, they're all in the Olympic Games. It's not one is better than the other. But I was mostly referring to something more something more important that, or more crucial that I consider. Let me put it in this metaphorical way. I consider writing like walking, and I consider movies like going in a car, and I consider video games like taking the plane, right? So these three different experiences are associated with three different means of transportation, because the experience we do while we walk, while we go in the car, and while we go in the plane are completely different, and the difference is speed. The difference is altitude. The difference is the perception that changes. The difference is the senses that we use and the senses that we lose in taking these means. So when I watch a movie, I can't possibly think about too much. And when I play a video game, gosh, I have no time at all to even, you know, it depends, of course, on the speed of the pace of the game. But so what I was trying to say is that are we going to disappear as a writer and turn into screen players and turn into game developers and contract all the experiences that were exploded in the book into these hyper-dense, hyper-linked, super interactive things? Yes, we gain, of course, something in these other media, but we should preserve the art of writing.
I think there will always be kind of a pushback effect, and so the more we get into this hyper-fast consumption of media, eventually it'll rebound, and there will be more people who crave to disconnect. There are already people who consider it, you know, like a luxury to not have a smartphone, because they can get away from the world. And so I think as time goes on, maybe we'll see it moving in the opposite direction. People will want that slower experience again.
Like the vinyl, like the vinyl that is coming back against the virtual music. Now more people are buying vinyl records than before. I used to be a DJ in the 90s, and I had tons of vinyl. And then when I grew up, I saw the vinyl disappear. It was CDs, and then it was completely material. It became MP3, and now I have my old turntables in the back door, and now these people in clubs are using an iPad. Where is you don't even use your hands anymore. And it's the same with writing, I think.
I think you can't underestimate how much people love a physical object, because people also love books because of their physical form and because they're beautiful to look at and touch and smell and collect.
Well, I wouldn't like a world where all the readers are collectors, but I also read in the digital, so I'm also interested in the content. Of course, content is the most important thing, but the act of writing and the pace of writing and what you can deliver with words is different. It's absolutely different from the empire of the image.
Well, I think it comes back to what Marshall McLuhan said in the 1960s, right? The more that an art form gives you space for your imagination to complete it, the more involving it will be. So I don't think that writing's going anywhere, because more so than any other art form, it requires completion by the audience. More so than anything else, it is very difficult with writing to objectively say, oh, well, this is what that story is. Because where the story happens is in the meeting place between what the writer wrote and what the reader is reading. And prose fiction leaves a lot of room for readers' imagination to complete what the writer created.
Yeah, but I'm scared that nobody missed the horse carriage.
Right.
Nobody is missing the people that were, you know, fixing the hoofs of the horse. How do you say the fellow? The horseshoes makers. You know, they disappeared. Now you go to the car and you fix your tire, right? Some jobs, you know, think about theater or the ballet or the opera. Some jobs are replaced by others. So I see it in a more developmental, you know, what will be, we will turn into storytellers, which happens, you know, now.
Right. Well, I think storytelling and writing are related, and there's a lot of overlap between storytellers and writers, but it's not exactly the same thing.
Of course.
But I think in English, it is closer than it is in other languages. Because English has less forms of artistic writing that aren't fiction. Other languages are a little more fluid in what prose can do. It's not that you can't do it in English, it just doesn't have that tradition as much as a lot of the European languages have. Of kind of, you know, the artistic essay, you know, which is kind of somewhere between fact and fiction. So the art of writing is different from the art of storytelling, but they're often linked.
No, yeah, sure. But if you were given like the choice of writing a book or a video game or a movie, what would you choose?
I would write a book.
Yeah.
Yes, because he would probably write a movie.
Yeah, it was born in another age.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, I started off as a filmmaker. I made two films when I was 19 and 20, and I thought that's where I would go. But ultimately, as a creator, it's too inner for me. Like, it's all inside. And filmmaking was a collaborative thing where the creative process didn't really fit what I wanted to do. I can't imagine working in any other media. I mean, that's what I do.
Okay.
Yeah, there's definitely something to that, in that if you are writing for a movie or a video game, you're part of a massive, massive machine, and you're just one cog in the works. Whereas when you are writing a book, or a short story especially, it's something where you have complete creative control. And so that is really nice as a creator.
Oh, so you're turning everything into an egocentric, narcissistic kind of relationship with your reader, or you disappear into the movie. You're just, you know, at the end titles, and so, or you are the director or the main actor, then you wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I guess
what
it depends.
Like, based on the story by Rich Larson, that's not enough.
I would be happy to take the movie money.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Well, obviously, I'm with Rich here. I'm all about being adapted as often as possible. There was one short film based on one of my stories that's out there. But I do want to say, part of what is more attractive to me in prose writing than, say, film or video game is that I don't care really about plot, and I don't care about dialogue. I use them as tools in what I'm trying to achieve, but I actually write as little dialogue as I can. I'm very minimal with my dialogue. I only use the dialogue that's absolutely necessary. And plot is something that I figure out as I go along. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. Part of the pleasure of writing is to find out what's going to happen, because I don't know before I start. And if I knew, then I would lose all motivation to write. There's a journey there, and that journey, which is again a very internal digging deep into what I call your story. Only prose fiction can allow me to do that.
All right. That's interesting. I like your approach in a way of going places where you don't know and not knowing where you're going, where it's kind of risky for me. I mean, I like the journey, and we all like to travel, of course, but we plan the travel in different ways, right? For example, I like to study a lot where I'm going, where I think you like to discover the things on place. It's different kinds of approach. Okay, we have around 10 minutes. If there are any questions, now is a...
was pushing too far, and or where you stop at by the editor or the publisher saying, please revise this, cut this, this is too much.
I think you've got a story about that, close to that.
Well, like the short fiction market is always changing, and you kind of have to be up on what people want and what people don't want. Normally, I'm pretty, I just do what I want. I write whatever I want and let them figure it out. And most of the time, there's no issue with it. But definitely, in the past few years, issues of identity, inclusivity, diversity, all of these things, I've never been censored, but I know that I write certain stories that wouldn't fit in certain markets. And so I know better now than to send them there, I guess.
I don't think I've had many issues with that. The only thing that comes to mind is that as a Montrealer, I think a lot of my characters speak like Montrealers. And we swear a lot. And and to me, that's just how people speak, right? And you know, they say fuck every other word. And American markets find that a little difficult. You know, I often get things, oh, your characters swear a lot, you know, but it's minor. It has never been a real problem.
If I can add something. I had I've written a story about immigrant people from Africa coming to Italy, and they were stopped at the on the Mediterranean Sea by 3D printed walls that come out of the ocean, and they're rescued by a ship and brought into the Indian Sea, where they terraform an island for these people. I sent this story to a Chinese market. And they liked the story very much, and they told me, well, you know, the problem is that these immigrants are Muslims, so we have a problem with the Muslim minority in China, so we cannot do that. And then they rejected it. I sent it to another editor in China, and he said, oh, I love this story. You know what? We will move the island into Hainan, which is a Chinese island, very touristic, very popular. And so they turn a problem into a solution. They want to be the savior of the immigrants. So what was a censorship turned out into some kind of self-promotion. Very, very strange. Any other question? Or I will ask other. Okay, I know what the answer is to this question, but I want to ask for of course the sake of the people. What themes do you prefer to write about, or in other terms, what is your poetic? Is a big word. poetic in the sense of the main ideas that come out of the body of your work.
Yeah, for me, I have a few themes that I return to a lot. One of them is family. Like many people, I have a complicated family. And so in my writing, I tend to explore familial relations. Another one is probably outsiderness. I've grown up in a lot of different places and usually never as, you know, a local. And so exploring the idea of being lonely or being cut off and wanting to find your way in to some kind of social situation.
I would say that one of the important themes or motifs or poetics of my work was captured in the title that we gave the book that I published with Future Fiction, which is called Altre Persone, Other Persons. And in a lot of my fiction, the idea of who or what is a person and what is other and what is not other comes up a lot. The other thing that's really big in my fiction is a sense of yearning, and it's in all my stories. And when my first collection came out, which was called Objects of Worship, there was an introduction by James Morrow, and one of the things that he said in it was that we usually think of literary fiction as being character-driven, and we think of genre fiction as being plot-driven. But Claude's stories are drive-driven. They go straight to the drive, to the yearning. And I think that was a very perceptive thing that Jim found in my stories. So I think that yearning is the overarching thing in my stories. I think in a lot of the reviews about my work, it comes up that, you know, we learn about, you know, my character's dreams and fears and sexuality, and it's all about what they need to become themselves. And about family, I do deal about family in some way, but in a very different way. For me, almost all of my characters are estranged from their families. They're isolated, they're alone, and part of their yearning is to find a family, so that their ultimate family will never be their biological family. It is almost always a found family, and that's a recurring theme.
Okay, so my next question is, what do you find in science fiction that other genre didn't give you? I mean, why this particular genre, in a way, you, Claude, have written many other kind of things, which ranges from new weird to, you know, fantastic, and so probably you're not particularly stick just to science fiction, but in a broader way. And to you, Rich, you're probably more into cyberpunk or post-cyberpunk science fiction. So why this and not another?
I'll answer this partly as a reader. What I like about SF as a reader is how, more so than any other type of fiction, both history and society are dealt with in explicit ways. Even if you're writing a very intimate story in science fiction, it will still deal with a scope that is larger than your little intimate story, so that it allows you to have both the intensity of an intimate story and the scope of something that is sociological and historical
larger
and anthropological, and that is really, really exciting. And I actually try to bring that science fiction sensibility into virtually any genre into which I write, and I write anything, you know, from realism to absurdism. But I try to bring that in because that's the thing I admire the most about SF.
For me, I think it's the creative freedom, and like Claude was saying, I feel like you can do anything that literary fiction can do in science fiction. You can hit all the same themes, you can have beautiful language, you can have compelling characters, but you can also do it on the moon just for fun, which is fun.
Okay, so if there are no other questions, my last question for the guest is what you're actually writing at the moment and any kind of future plans you have.
Yeah, my first novel is coming out in July, and I signed a 3-book deal, so right now I am writing a sequel, and yeah, I would rather be writing short fiction, but I took the money, so I have to finish this book first.
Well, the next thing for me is that I am heading to Spain, because my third book, called Nocturnes and Other Nocturnes, was just translated into Spanish, and I've got, right after I'm done here, I'm going for a 10-day tour in Spain. My most recent book was a book called Venera Dreams, A Weird Entertainment, and it is set right off the coast of Italy, because I really love Italy. And my current most active project is something called Chronicles of the Second Global War, and it's an alternate history series of stories set in the modern day, but the geopolitical map is completely different.
Okay, we're done. So thank you very much. Thank you guys.
Avete ascoltato Fantascientificast, podcast di fantascienza e cronache della galassia, da un'idea di Paolo Bianchi e Omar Serafidi, con il contributo cibernetico del Cylon Prof Massimo De Santo. Potete seguirci ed interagire con noi sul nostro sito fantascientificast.it, su Facebook alla pagina Fantascientificast, su Twitter sul profilo @fantascicast, sul nostro canale Telegram t.me/fantascientificast, sulla nostra community Telegram t.me/fsccommunity. Se siete particolarmente timidi, potete utilizzare la vecchia, cara e affidabile posta elettronica scrivendoci all'indirizzo redazione@fantascientificast.it. Tutte le puntate sono disponibili sul nostro sito, su Apple iTunes, su Spotify e su Podbean all'indirizzo podcast.fantascientificast.it. Se volete, potete lasciarci una valutazione a 5 stelle su Apple iTunes ed offrirci una birra romulana o un gotto esplosivo pangalattico, sostenendoci tramite una donazione PayPal utilizzando l'apposito pulsante sul nostro sito. Fantascientificast è una produzione amatoriale. Non si intende infrangere alcun copyright, i cui diritti appartengono ai rispettivi detentori. Autorizzazione SIAE 5612I5359. Nessun byte e nessun tribolo sono stati maltrattati durante la produzione di questo podcast. Alexa 4 e l'equipaggio di Fantascientificast vi augurano lunga vita e prosperità e vi danno appuntamento alla prossima puntata lungo la rotta di Kessel.
Settimo simbolo inserito nel computer. Blocco 1 pronto. Blocco 1 posizionato.
Potenza erogata 23%. Così.
Blocco 2 è pronto.
Attivato.
Blocco 2 posizionato.
Siamo al 35%.
Allarme rosso, evacuare l'area intorno allo Stargate.
Liberata l'area, torniamo da voi, chiudo le porta.
Andiamo, sbrigatevi.
C'era quello sotto la grande pietra?
Sì.
Mio padre lo trovò nel 1928. È fatto di un minerale che non si trova sulla Terra.
Blocco 5 posizionato.
75%.
Blocco 6 pronto. Blocco 6 posizionato.
Non eravamo mai riusciti ad andare oltre nella sequenza.
Blocco 7 pronto.
Pronto, attivato.
Blocco 7 posizionato.
How to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.